Lord. Howdy and what's up? This is the Long to a Fake Teams.com podcast. I am Natty. He is Brandon. Brandon, how are you doing?
Great Sunday night. Happy to be doing the pod with you, Natty.
Wish I could say the same. We waited just long enough for the Lakers to come back, and it looks like they're going to beat the Pistons, and fuck you, Brandon. That's all I have to say. But
so what was that stat you texted me earlier tonight about the Lakers and the Pistons?
Okay, so the announcers said at one point that the Lakers hadn't won in Detroit in 7 seasons, and I thought that was fucking nuts. Especially considering the championship year. But then I was like, oh, wait, that's bubble. So, like, the optimum LeBron Anthony Davis Lakers haven't won in Detroit because they weren't there for that season, I guess.
Okay.
But still, that feels like a really long time. I also don't know if it's true, but like the announcer said it. Anyway, the real news is that LeBron got ejected in the third quarter going after a rebound. He got tied up with Isaiah Stewart. Beef Stew got a little bloodied. And LeBron got his second ejection of his career. He also like tried to apologize to Beef Stew, and Beef Stew wasn't having any of it, which God bless you. I love you and go Pistons forever. On the other hand, if LeBron James says he's sorry to you, I feel like you should just accept it. You should just say, you know what, that's cool. It's like if the president apologizes to you, you should be like, it's okay. Thank you for your apology. I accept that. I mean, I would not have thought less of Isaiah Stewart if he had just been like, you're LeBron James, it's cool. Like, I don't think you meant it. You're not a dirty player. It's fine. You're my hero. I love you.
It's easy for you to say when you didn't just take 500 pounds of torque to your face. But
absolutely cool. True. And, you know, I love Beef Stew. It's cool that he's tough. But, you know, like, if LeBron James says he, like, if he said he was sorry to me, I'd say that don't worry about it. It's fine.
DW broke his orbital bone or something. Do we know if he's okay?
I'm not watching
the game.
Yeah. Oh, really? You weren't watching Lakers Pistons? That brings us into a game that we both watched. The challenge game of last week was Warriors at Cavaliers on Thursday night. We thought it was going to be a little bit more interesting, and then Evan Mobley got injured. And
Jared Allen,
that's right. So there were four dudes. So the people that didn't play for the Cavs were Mobley, Colin Sexton, who's out for the year, the finisher, Lauri Markkanen, who's still out, and Jared Allen. The Dubs ended up winning 104-89, but the Cavaliers led 54-51 at the half. And then at the start of the fourth, after the third, the Cavaliers led 81-68. And then the Warriors scored 36 to the Cleveland Cavaliers 8 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's
so you texted me during this game and said the Warriors usually take over in the third. Yes. And this was the rare occasion where the Warriors actually kind of fell behind in the third and then just annihilated them in the fourth.
Dude, Curry had 40 points. 20 of them were in the fourth quarter. 20 of them were in the fourth quarter. Let's see. Also, Curry was one for one from free throw.
Which that was what I was going to say. So free throws, there were really none in this game. The Warriors shot 7 of 8 from the stripe, and then the Cavs 9 of 16. So last week, I think we talked about free throws, and teams are averaging about 20 per game, per team. So that's 40 per game. You know, in this game, you had 24 combined. So free throws were really light in this one. The Cavs just didn't shoot great across the board from three, from the field, from the line. So, you know, it kind of caught up to them at the end there. You know, they you know, valiant effort. The thing that stood out to me the most, though, I'd say, was Darius Garland. That guy mm-hmm. looks legitimate. Like, he, especially in the beginning of the game, you know, second half, he wasn't quite as dominant, but he came out of the gate. I mean, he was shooting a step back. He was getting in the lane. He was dishing the ball. I was really, really impressed by him. And, you know, a guy that we've talked about a couple times, Ricky Rubio, he didn't shoot the ball well at all. But you can just tell that this team, that's why you can't play these games on paper, right? And you can't just trade guys who are veteran guys if you're rebuilding, because you can just see his fingerprints all over this team. And you can see how much better these young guys are just by playing with Ricky Rubio. Like, I felt like his presence was just like, you know, you have to watch the game to really see how much he impacts the game.
And he's not passive, even though he's not a scorer. You know, like, he's a pretty, like, tough little Spaniard dude. You know, like, he gets pissed. There were a couple of baseline drives that he had where he was just like, guys, get in fucking position, which I thought was mm-hmm. kind of funny. Garland, 25 points. Like, yeah, he was really the only Cavalier that had a good game. Aside from a Kevin Love sighting, he had 17 points, 7 rebounds, 4 for 10 from 3. Make of that what you will. But the Dubs didn't really shoot that well either. You know, like,
yeah, they did not. Not
Jordan
three.
Poole and Maple Jordan had bad shooting nights. Kuminga went 0 for 4 from the floor. Dre had 4 points, but he also had 14 dimes, but only 2 boards. I mean, this was an oddly, like, defensive, high energy game, I thought, and kind mm-hmm. of not a great offensive game from anybody until the fourth, when Steph, who is now leading the league at 29.5 points per game, just took over. We did get an Ed Davis game, which I love because Jared Allen was out. Old man Ed. Old Ed went for 7 points, 14 boards. Just a vintage Ed game. I love him so much.
It's probably worth noting that with Mobley out, Dean Wade is seeing starter minutes. And Dean, look,
who is he?
Saying,
he played 40 minutes. Like, who the fuck
really
is that guy?
I don't know about this guy, but I will say that he seems to be confident. Didn't really hesitate when he caught the ball and he was open. He let it fly.
Yeah.
Seems like he can shoot. He's a big guy, 6'10". So, you know, he's going to clean the glass a little bit. But, you know, Lauri Markkanen is back now. So that's a guy that, you know, probably talk about a little bit more later in the show. But he's a guy that I'm looking at right now at, I believe he's about 30% owned right now. And he's
Markkanen
going to kind of have
not Dean Wade. There's no
Markkanen,
fucking way.
Yes.
Wade is
no, no, no.
Okay. I was going to be like,
no, Markkanen.
No, does everyone know this guy but me? Are you all hanging out and talking about Dean Wade without me?
No.
I mean, he went 17-9-5, dude. He had an actual game.
Yeah, so Markkanen right now is 37% owned in ESPN leagues. So I would expect to see him get a nice bump whenever he is officially cleared. Totally. I think he's cleared for tomorrow's game.
Okay,
so that might be someone that you look for you know, someone to pick up this week. And,
dude, with Mobley out, like, Markkanen is, I mean, they paid him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're... if he can regain his shooting form, then that's perfect. He was great in fantasy too.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Jared Allen will probably be back. So,
hopefully,
you know, he will obviously retake his role as, you know, the anchor there. One other thing though, I want to say is, one thing, you know, I don't know if this necessarily helps or hurts his fantasy value, but this seems like a great, great situation on the Warriors for Andrew Wiggins. I mean, he gets to go up against the other teams at best second, you know, best defender, and oftentimes maybe their third or even fourth when Klay gets back. And there's this guy should be able to just roll out of bed and get 20 points on this team. And
dude,
the fact that
the team that drafted you against the team that drafted you and traded you away. Like,
yes. he was left out of that letter by LeBron.
I would have thought that he would be the dude with the most at the end of the game. I really did. Like, what the fuck? But he seems
to have really settled into his role though, and he seems like he's going to, you know, be the guy who is going to put the clamps down on the defensive end. But he's going to get, if he doesn't score like 15 to 20 points every night, it's because, you know, he's not trying to.
I mean, I want to say that Isaac Okoro did play good defense, I thought, and I do like him. But, like, the Dubs just had an off shooting night all around, I think. Like, I'm not going to say that the Cavaliers' defense was the cause. I just think that, like, Steph took over because he saw that it wasn't happening with anybody else. Like, just nobody had touch. I don't think the Cavaliers' defense with all these dudes out is actually that good. I thought Damian Lee was good.
He's been good for them all year.
Like, that stood out to me. Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, we know the Warriors look great. They are the class of the NBA right now. And the Cavs were shorthanded. They're missing, you know, probably two of their best three players. So, you know, I think we kind of got the best of what we could have expected, all things being considered from that game. From that team.
I mean, it was like watching Steph in the fourth really brought me back. Like, that was cool, especially because before that started happening, the Cavs were winning. So, like, in a weird way, it was a cool game because you were just like, oh, all right, the Warriors had an off night and the Cavs get to steal one. Like, that's cool. It happens all the time. And then Steph was like, no, fuck that. I'm just going to win by myself.
Yeah.
I mean, they scored 38 points and Steph had 20 of them in the fourth. You know? And the Cavs didn't even score 10. It was very nostalgic. And he's points per game leader right now. Like, MVP is not an impossibility, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The challenge game for this upcoming week, Thanksgiving week, is from me to Brandon. Obviously, everybody's holiday plans, you know, we wanted to try to work with that. So what we're doing is the Pelicans at the Jazz on Friday night and on Saturday night. They're whatever the schedule. I mean, they just figured it out this way, but it's a back-to-back, the exact same teams, which is amazing. And so you can watch either of them. You can watch both of them. Doesn't matter. But our challenge game during this holiday week is two games for the price of one. And the Pelicans are dreadful. They're 3-15, and the Jazz are really good. They're 11-5.
Christmas came early, huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, this is an opportunity. I am in my challenge games trying to get rid of the bad teams first so that we can, like, challenge
oh, better are you?
Later
I
in the season.
I couldn't tell.
On the other hand, you know, like, seeing the Pelicans now going up against a legit team, we'll be able to see what BI can do. You know, I love Brandon Ingram. You know, Jonas Valanciunas has been good. Like, there are dudes fantasy-wise that it would be interesting to watch go up against this Utah defense. And, you know, it's two games at Utah. And New Orleans sucks, so let's get it out of the way while we're, like, fat and full and high and drunk. Just, you know, and we can do it either night. Anyway, that's the challenge game. Let's move on to our team focus for the week, which is the Knicks. Brandon, your thoughts on the New York Knickerbockers?
So, you know, the Knicks, one of our local teams here, Brooklyn and New York, get to catch them probably a little more than I'd like. But
damn, I mean, they're 9-7. Fuck you, Jesus. They're fifth in the East.
No, I don't hate the Knicks. The thing that kind of sticks out the most to me about the Knicks is just like how deep their rotation is. They're going like 10 deep on any given night, which is kind of rare in today's league. you know, usually teams are kind of more in that nine deep and then really focusing more on eight players with one guy kind of just playing fringe minutes. But they're going a legit 10 deep, right? And it's concentrated in the guards and in the and in the front court, right? So you've got 3 point guards on any given night. You don't really know which one is going to get the minutes, right? Like, I watched the Knicks Rockets and Kemba Walker is a starting point guard, plays 21 minutes. Derrick Rose and Quickly, backup guards. Quickly is listed as a shooting guard, but for all intents and purposes, you know, he's a combo point shooting guard. Both played 21 minutes as well. So it's kind of hard to really predict who, you know, it seems like Tibbs is going to go with the hot hand a little bit here. So it's kind of hard to predict who's going to produce on any given night. Like Kemba Walker going for 9 points, 3 assists and 2 rebounds from a fantasy perspective, like that's dreadful, right? So you expect a starting point guard to be able to produce a little bit more, but it's going to be tough because you've got the other two guards, you've got Alex Burks coming off the bench. And then, like, you know, haven't even spoken about kind of the logjam they have in the front court too. The one guy I think from the Knicks who I think, you know, even though he's not shooting the ball well right now, we've talked about him a little bit on the show, but RJ Barrett to me seems like the only guy beyond Julius Randle whose minutes are completely safe because he's the only guy that can kind of do what he does. He's like a true like wing player who can guard another elite wing. He can kind of play the two or the three. The rest of these guys are all kind of combo scoring guards and big men. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough to know like Mitchell Robinson versus Nerlens Noel on any given night. How much is Obi Toppin going to play? You know, is Burks, there's probably going to be some nights where Burks does nothing. And then there's going to be nights like the game we watched where he's kind of like steals the show at the end. Right. So the Knicks, they're just so deep. And they're playing everybody that it's going to be a tough one to predict. I would say in deeper leagues, deeper fantasy leagues, you know, they have a lot of guys that are valuable here. But if you're in a weekly league, it's going to be tough to really rely on anyone beyond Julius Randle and RJ Barrett.
Dude, the minutes, like this is a Tom Thibodeau team, mm-hmm. You know, like a dude that plays his starters 57 minutes every 48 minute game. You know, it's like, this is.
He's not doing that here.
Well, okay. Let me give you some numbers. The starters for the Knicks are averaging 66.9 points per game, which is 26th in the NBA. The bench is scoring 40.7, which is third.
Yeah.
Kemba and Fournier, their two big offseason acquisitions, do not play in the fourth quarter. They don't close. So Kemba, who's averaging 12-2-3, and he's number 128 on the player radar for basic, like you have to, in your calculus of having him on your team, you have to realize like he's probably not going to close. And if he's not scoring, then there's no real reason to have him out there.
Yeah, that's terrible in fantasy, right? Like that.
Yeah.
If you have Kemba Walker on your team right now, like you're considering maybe dropping him, right? I mean, he's not quite there yet, but 12-2-3. I mean, come on.
Like in real life, I'm almost Tibbs brings him off the bench, you know, and tries to inject like some scoring that way, because. It's just not working. Like the Knicks are almost, they're not dreadful to watch, but it is grinding.
Yeah, it's not fun, man.
I mean, just a few numbers, like they're fifth in the East right now. They have the 13th best point differential. They have the 11th best offensive rating, the 17th best defensive rating. They're 14th in drives per game, and they're 13th in field goal percentage on drives. They're 8th in three-point attempts per game, which surprised me, and they're 3rd in three-point percentage. They're 22nd in free-throw percentage, which sucks because they're 10th in free-throw attempts, so they're leaving a lot of points with their bad free throw percentage on that. It's like you see all these numbers and then you see the season record of 9-7 and you're like, oh yeah, successful. This is good. And then you actually watch them play and it doesn't look good. Like you are starting guys that you cannot close with, and the guys that come off the bench to replace them are just totally better. They're just in the way that you play, you know, like in the style that you play, they're just better.
I don't know. From my perspective, none of these guys really stand out that much, though. I think they just, they all are playing their role, and that's fine, but it's got to be hard for these guys to like build a consistent rhythm on a night to night basis, because you know, you just don't know how much you're going to play on any given night if you're not coming out of the gate. I've seen games from Fournier where Fournier looks like he's worth the money they paid him. And then you see other games sure. where, like you said, he doesn't play at the end of the game and he gives you like 7 or 8 points. So it's just hard to know. And it's like, you know, from a fantasy manager perspective, it's tough. Right. It's hard to feel any sort of confidence when you're, you know, banking on these players. But I got to imagine, even from an actual basketball player standpoint, this has got to be a tough situation to play in. Like if you're Emmanuel Quickley after, you know, having kind of the season he had last year to kind of come into this situation. Yeah, it's like that's got to be really frustrating. Right. So then when he does play, is he in the right mindset? Is he really going to play to his, you know, optimal state? I don't know. I don't love this situation. I just wish that there was a little more clarity on like the pecking order.
And to me, Kemba doesn't really have that much trade value. So I would just like exchange his minutes with Quickley. It's like I'd play Quickley much more. But also
talk about a fall from grace. He's got to be one of the guys whose value dropped the most in the last 3 years.
He just did so much when he was in Charlotte on the offense that you weren't expecting him to do anything on defense. And then it's like, okay, you suffered injuries and you're a small guard anyway, and you're not really a two-way player. And all of that is colliding. And it's like the Knicks were hoping for a guy who scored at least 20 a night. And he might just be going through the slump that everybody is. You know, like that's totally possible. The Knicks, from the games that I've seen, they do not look like a team that's in mid-season form. You know, like Orange Julius isn't driving as much as he should. They're so up and down, like you said, and inconsistent. But it's also a Tom Thibodeau team, and they're in fifth place. You know, like mm-hmm. even though they've looked bad, they've still had success, and they still play hard. So yeah. I think some of this goes back to what you said about RJ Barrett, who is at least the second most important player on the team, maybe the first or tied with the first with Julius. But like he's 15-5-5 right now, I think. You know, like he just hasn't started the season super great.
His shooting's been
it's
know,
31% from outside, but that'll get better.
That'll change. He's going to get the minutes, he's going to get the opportunity. Yeah. He and Julius are the only guys that don't have to worry about getting yanked, right? Like they're going to play.
I mean, you would be sabotage to pull RJ.
Like they don't have anyone else
like
that can.
Like I don't even know if Leon Rose would be like, Tibbs, you're fired if you bring him off the bench.
I'm confident banking on him to round it out.
Yeah, almost everyone has been shooting poorly to start the season. It's going to improve at least a little bit. Like people aren't this bad, and the rules, even though they've changed, it's not like catch and shoot threes. It shouldn't have anything to do with that. So whatever. But yeah, unimpressed by the Knicks. Even though I think that they can do better, I still don't feel like they're like, I'm not afraid of them in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Okay, let's move on to comment on our studs and duds from last week. Last week, Brandon said that Cade Cunningham, go Pistons, would be a stud this week. And shit, you were right. He had a triple-double today against the Lakers. And even before that, it was still a win. He averaged 27-6 over the past week. Cade looked great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cade is, you know, he's settling in. You know, he may struggle with the shot all season, but I don't think that really is going to hold him back that much from a fantasy standpoint, just because he's going to do so many other things and he's going to have such a high usage that, you know, he could go, you know, he can shoot sub 40% and still probably easily give you, you know, 12 to 15 points. And he's going to give you, you know, I would bank on most nights, he's going to give you at least 10 combined rebounds and assists too. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who like on a bad night is like 13-5-5, right? Like, and then, you know, if he gets a deflection or a block, right, that kind of just is the icing on the cake. So I think this guy is going to be like an easy fantasy stud, kind of like a Julius Randle, right? Where Julius Randle, I don't think anyone necessarily looks at him right now and says that he is a guy that is a, you know, dominant basketball player, but he's an all-star and he's a guy that can like fill up the stat sheet every night. And that's kind of how I see Cade. Like, not saying that he can't develop into being a true superstar, but I think for fantasy value, he doesn't have to just, you know, be a top 50 guy.
Cade is a good player with a long leash on a bad team. And that is fantasy fucking gold. I think that he could even end the year top 50 player rater just because of the volume and maybe a not too infrequent triple double. You know, like, yeah, he's gotten better every single game he's played. He looks like he's the most talented player on the court for the Pistons, no question. This is a team that could make trades later in the season, which would perhaps even increase Cade's already significant role. So, yeah, I think the sky's the limit in fantasy for Cade. I don't know whether he's going to be a real-life good player for a couple of years, because, you know, just like with everybody else, got to learn your sets, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, he's already a good defender, but you see him making some mistakes, but he's great. I mean, he's just fantasy gold. He's a guy that's going to get drafted in the first three rounds, I think, next year. Like, he's that good with volume, because good player on a bad team.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, he's not, he doesn't necessarily, like I said, he doesn't really have to shoot that well to be
right,
really productive from a fantasy perspective. So if he has the occasional night where his shot's falling too, then he's going to put up like, those are going to be the nights where he's putting up, you know, those Julius Randle, you know, borderline like LeBron type numbers.
And he's just all over the court. It is fun to watch him just in terms of real basketball. Like, this is, I don't really care about rookie of the year stuff for him. I'm just glad
he might be right back in it, though. I mean, Mobley.
Oh, for sure.
Mobley hurt. He might have thrust himself right. Anytime you get a triple-double.
Exactly. He's like running the team, you know? Yeah. And like, goddamn, thank God for Dwayne Casey, because he's just so good with guards, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and he knows how to build benches. But anyway, moving on, my stud was Lu Dort. I win that one from the volume. He also averaged 20 points and 5 rebounds over the past week.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that much this week.
Hell yeah, dude. Wow, that was super
right
lucky.
After we did our Thunder focus last week, I told you I thought Dort, look, is he a guy long term? I don't know, but I think Oklahoma City wants to see if he's a guy. I think there's going to be an opportunity for Dort. Yeah. Is he going to average 20 points a game? No, but he could average 16, 17.
He's going to be a guy who's out there, and whenever he has 3 or 4 games, he's worthy of at least streaming. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, I mean, you know, anytime you can average 20 points per game over a week. That's nice. That's pretty good.
He looks like he's a decent shooter. So
he's a glue guy on a bad young team. You know, like guys tend to accumulate stats.
Right. Yeah. No, that was a good call.
Okay, the duds for last week. So Brandon's dud was Draymond Green, who is playing tonight. So that's a TBD. The Warriors had four games this week, but Dre sat for the one against the Pistons. Technically, he has a worse player rating over the last seven games. So, like, you know, that's if he has another mediocre to medium game, he'll be a dud. I think he'll win that. If he has a great game tonight, though, he might lose it. I don't know.
Yeah. He had, I think in the Cavs game, I think he had 14 assists.
Yeah.
And like four points or something.
Yeah. So, he went 4-14. No, he went 4-2-14. That was his in two boards. It's a four
pretty
points.
pretty cool stat line. I love seeing stuff like that.
I was so upset that we didn't get to see him play Mobley. I was like, that's going to be a really fucking cool matchup. But
that would have been fun.
My dud was Derek White, who sucked. He only had two games. He scored 23 total points in those two games. He only had 4 points against Minnesota. He's slumping super duper hard. I win the fuck out of that one. Derek White needs to watch out. Like, there's a young mouths to feed on the Spurs, and if he doesn't break out of his slump soon, then I think some of those other guys could start taking over. We are not going to do studs and duds this week. I am just going to mention a few things. Luka only has two games this week, and he's coming back from an ankle injury, presumably. You know, it's not like a sure thing that he's going to play in the first game. So if you're in a weekly league, it is so hard to sit a dude who's 99% rostered. But even if he does come back, his minutes could be capped. So, like, he might not get starter, you know, the full complement of his starter's minutes. So I if you have a dude who can give you four games and you can slot him in there, I would suggest considering it. I know it's so hard sitting a dude who's 99%. And, like, he could have a triple-double in one game and then win you the week. And then I'm the asshole. So it's rough, but, like, worth pointing out. Mm-hmm. Also, like, Bobby Portis, like Brandon mentioned maybe the past 2 weeks, who's 36% rostered. The Bucks have four games this week. Orlando, Detroit.
So Denver, Portis was my volume guy.
Oh, he's your – okay, then never mind. Okay, cool.
No, that's cool. Let's talk about him now. Mr. Bobby Portis.
Okay, he's your volume dude. Yeah, all right.
So we brought him up a couple weeks ago. We mentioned that Brolo's been out
game of the season. Yeah,
does he have an ETA at this point? I haven't seen it.
They keep being vague about shit. It's like, I'm getting better, but I'm not going to come back until I'm 100%. And honestly, I sort of feel like that's the right thing to do. Like, it's a back issue. And you're
playing for the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if Brolo is the difference between you making the playoffs and not, then that's another conversation. Like, you should, especially with the way Portis has been playing.
Yeah, so Portis, I mean, he's been even better than I would have expected. Like I said, he's a really good rebounder. He can defend. He can score. He has an opportunity. And he can shoot the three. I mean, there's really not much to like about him right now.
I have some stats for you. Boy, do I.
Hit me with it. Well, actually, before you do
you give me yours.
I'd just like to point out
your volume.
So he's on the year he's shooting about 42% from deep, 48% from the field, and you know, so he's shooting the ball pretty well. But last year, you know, I know it was a small sample size, just one season, but he shot the ball 47% from deep last year. Not saying he's going to do that. Not saying he's even going to approach that. But it does suggest to me that he might be a guy who can sustain this 41-42% from deep. And if he's going to continue to attempt, you know, close to five threes a game, it's going to translate to scoring. And we already know what he's going to do on the defensive side with the defensive glass. And he's a really good offensive rebounder too. So love Portis for volume. I love him just going forward. And until Brolo comes back, I just don't see anyone else really competing with him for minutes.
It's perfect for Milwaukee. They're so grateful he re-signed with them for less money. Also, the Bucks, like I said, they're playing the Magic at home. They're playing the Pistons at home. Then they get to play at Denver and at the Pacers. Like, Denver's a mash unit, and the Pacers, who knows from night to night, although their front court is for real. But, like, three of those games should be actually pretty nice for Portis, I think. Okay.
Only one thing real quick, just on the you mentioned Indy's front court. Indy, did you know that Indy right now is leading the league in blocks? And I know a lot of that is Miles Turner, but I just thought that was interesting.
A lot of that is Miles Turner. He's over like three blocks a game or something. It's nuts. Yeah. Like, you can still make the argument both ways about which player you'd rather have, Sabonis or Turner. Because if you got rid of either of them and, you know.
Now, Sabonis has been amazing.
Yeah, sure. But Turner does think, like, Sabonis.
No, it's tough. I agree. Both of them are amazing.
Like, Turner is the sort of guy in the front court that I think can help you win a championship. Sabonis is not. Like, he needs to have the right team around him to really be that effective, I think.
Yeah, Sabonis is probably a guy who helps you win more regular season games. Whereas Turner, like you said, is probably he's kind of the prototypical big right now. But this was a tangent.
Action from three. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Getting back to Bobby Portis. Okay. Over the past 2 weeks, and Portis missed games to start the season, but just over the past 2 weeks, he's averaging 17 plus points per game, 9 plus rebounds per game, 1 plus dime, 1 plus steal, and 2 plus 3-pointers made. Mm-hmm. Only 9 players in the NBA are currently averaging at least 17 points per game and 9 rebounds per game. Okay, only 9 dudes do that. Only 2 average 17 plus points per game, 9 plus rebounds per game, and 2 plus 3-pointers made per game. So if Portis can keep this up for the rest of the season, he would be the third after these two. Can you guess those two? More than 17 points, or at least 17 points and at least 9 rebounds and at least 2 3-pointers made. Only 2 dudes are doing that right now.
Julius Randle.
Mm-hmm. Bing bong. Nice job. Yep, that's one of them.
I want to say Luka, but I feel like his rebounding maybe isn't quite that high. No.
Maybe his threes aren't that high. It's not Luka.
Really? Paul George?
He's not. No, but that's a good guess. PG-13 has been for real this year.
Let's see, can I think of one more?
A big who can shoot threes.
Anthony Davis?
No, close. It's the big cat. It's Carl Anthony Towns.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
Okay. Who has been, you know, strangely quiet this year. Like, he's not shooting enough. I mean, the Timberwolves have kind of been quiet, but that's because no one gives a shit. Like, Ant's on that team. Anyway, if Portis can keep up this 17-9 with the three-pointers that, like you said, from last year, he should be able to, like, he's proven he can, then he's going to be on a list of three. And that's fucking amazing. Because Portis also has eligibility at center. So if you can replicate a guy like Cat, I mean, Portis isn't scoring 25 a game, but like 80% of Cat for what, 36% rostered? Like, you should take advantage of that.
Yes, you should.
You've been totally right about that from the beginning.
Yeah, okay. That one is an easy one.
That was your volume dude. My volume dude is a guy who is also in the 30s. He's 32% rostered. It's Talen Horton Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers play at the Knicks, at the Pacers, and that's a back-to-back, so maybe LeBron doesn't play both of those. And then in L.A. for Sacramento and Detroit, two games that they should definitely win. So they get four games. Since Talen Horton Tucker came back, he's averaged 18-6-2 with one steal per game. He's had some bad ones also, like he scored 4 points. He didn't look great against the Pistons today, but he definitely contributed. I just think that he's going to get volume because I don't think that LeBron's going to play both games of that back-to-back. And I think that THT's defense, especially with AD, is incredibly valuable. So I think he's going to be out there on the floor for a lot. 32% rostered. That's my volume guy.
I like
Do
it.
You have, oh, yeah. Any thoughts on THT?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him a little bit last week. So, you know, my thing with THT is like many guys who come into the NBA who, you know, are really, really athletic and a little bit projection, his jump shot is going to be inconsistent some nights.
Yeah.
But I think given the situation, I mean, this it's amazing how different the situation is in just a year. Like he was buried on the depth chart last year.
Right.
And then like now it's like we're like they're like Talen, yeah, score 20. Yeah, sure. You know,
yeah.
Like
he scored 28 like, and 25, you know, yeah. Like against Chicago and then against the Bucks, which mm-hmm. is kind of insane. But yeah. They paid him. They want him there. Like they could have sent him out.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the Lakers have shown that they can draft well. They've drafted, you know, pretty good talent for the most part. They don't keep them on the team always, but maybe this is the guy they actually do keep around. So
imagine Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, KCP, like if they had just kept
Julius Randle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
a lot of talent has gone through there for sure. Mm-hmm. But they still have a ton and people need to chill out on the Lakers. Like it's fine. If we're 20% into the season and, you know, they've been without LeBron for all but five games or something like that. It's fine.
I agree. But they did just get the doors blown off of them with LeBron on by Boston the other night. So.
But just they saying. Were losing to the Pistons and LeBron got ejected in the third and then they won that game. So like
Pistons.
Yeah, sure. But you need those wins, right? Like that's why Westbrook to me is still on the team and still makes sense to LeBron. Cause it's like in games where I'm not there, Westbrook's a dude that can help you win, which is exactly what like Anthony Davis is too, or what he's supposed to be. There aren't that many dudes in the league. Like Buddy Hield doesn't take over games, but Westbrook can. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, definitely true. He's a guy that when without LeBron, he's a guy who can take over.
Like Westbrook should be able to beat the five worst teams in the league with Anthony Davis and without LeBron, I think. You should just be able to do that.
Yeah. It's what he's doing tonight.
Yeah. And who cares if it's ugly? Whatever. Okay. Do you have any under 20% rostered ads for the week?
Yeah. So I want to just throw out a few names at different percentiles, but I'll focus on my lower owned guys. But I'll just throw out a couple names here for more shallow leagues. So Josh Giddey, still under 50%.
Yes. Good. God damn it. Giddey up. Dude. I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. If everything that we're saying about Cade, this is like a poor man's, he's going to give you poor man Cade Cunningham type production. So, you know, if Cade will be 90% owned probably in like a week, Giddey should probably be 65 to 70% if Cade's at 90. He's still at under 50 right now. And I mean, assists are just so hard to come by. And this guy, they trust him with the ball in his hands. If you watch OKC, Gilgeous Alexander is the lead guard, but he's not really like a pure point guard facilitator as much. He can play off the ball. He likes to cut. He likes to catch the ball and cut. He likes to, he'll score on the perimeter, like some catch and shoot situations too.
He's driving so, fucking 25 times a game and shit. Like, yeah, he looks he looks like Flash.
Yeah. But I think those are going to be some easy dimes for Giddey, right? Like Giddey's going to find him cutting and Giddey's going to have the opportunity to like be more of that facilitator. Kind of in the way that Ricky Rubio is doing what he's doing in Cleveland, where, you know, he may not be necessarily the lead guard, but he's kind of the lead facilitator. That's what I see with Giddey. So that's just a guy under 50. Under 40.
He's like 10-7-7 over the past week or something like that, isn't he? Like he's like his scoring.
He's been great.
If his scoring gets even just a little bit better, he'll be a dude where it's like, okay, you can get a couple of triple doubles at least every season.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. So under 40,
he's 19.
Under 40%.
Yeah.
No, he's, they keep getting younger, Natty. We keep getting older. Under 40, a couple guys I like. Aaron Gordon, we talked about him. We talked about Markkanen earlier in the show. So just, keep in mind that, like we said, it looks like Mobley's going to be out for a few weeks. Kevin Love's playing a little bit, but I think that Markkanen should see starter minutes right away and continue to kind of, be able to put up his numbers. So that's a guy who's under 40.
Sorry to interrupt, but like if you're the Cavs front office, you're like, hey, Evan, you can take one or 2 weeks even after you feel 100%. We don't need you to right away. They should
no
be
doubt.
Concerned. But
yeah, for sure. And then under 30, another volume guy this week on the Bucks, who you may have mentioned him before, but we definitely talked about him on the pod, but Grayson Allen right now is
fucker.
Grayson Allen is putting up the shots
rostered like a top 75 player. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that your guy?
No, because it.
But Grayson right now is attempting 8.5 threes a game. He's hitting him at 42%. He's a career 39% 3-point shooter. He's hitting 92% of his free throw attempts. Now, granted, he doesn't get to the line much, but that just suggests to me that this guy is as good of a shooter as he was advertised coming out of college. And he's another guy on the Bucks who's got an opportunity right now, and he's playing off of, probably the most dominant guy in the league. So, he's going to get open threes, and he's legit. I mean, the guy can shoot the three. Now, is he going to be like as good, a good enough all around player for them to play him 30 minutes a game and win a championship? I don't know. But from a fantasy perspective, where you're mostly focused on offensive categories, as long as this guy's playing these kind of minutes and they're letting him let it fly 8.5 times from deep, sign me up.
His reputation, like all the tripping and all the bullshit from college, doesn't seem to have translated to the NBA from what I've been able to read. Everyone seems to love him and he plays super hard. He won some of those games when the Bucks were a MASH unit. People are coming back. He has turned himself into one of the best snipers in the league, and the Bucks need outside shooting in order to optimize Giannis, which is what we were just talking about with Bobby Portis. So like when you can go 4 out, 1 in and the one in is Giannis, then you're doing it right. Mm-hmm. So Grayson Allen, you're right. The defense, we're going to have to wait and see, but right now the Bucks have Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, and eventually Dante DiVincenzo, and they're all three sort of playing. They're supposed to be interchangeable. And if Grayson Allen is the best of those three, then that means he gets to start, I think. When you can start next to Giannis, and like that's just such a gift, and Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, he's in a situation to succeed. You're it's absolutely the perfect
situation for him.
Yeah. And honestly, whether he starts or comes off the bench, really, because like he plays sort of the same role no matter what. He's there to keep the lanes open and spread the floor.
Yeah. One other 30% guy. I won't talk about him much because we've already talked about him. But he's still under 30. Is Franz Wagner? He's playing 4 games this week, guys. Pick him up. Just pick him up already.
No one watches Magic games, which is fine.
The guy's a stud.
Dude, the problem is that, like, you know, the higher draft picks, like Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green, like some of the dudes haven't really wowed. And Cade only just came back and has only just started looking good. And Mobley's out. You know, it's like this draft is...
Draft a lot. It's just, you're right.
I don't want to be like it's disappointing. It's just that, you know, like bad luck to start.
Yeah, how about you're right.
But all right. Wagner is what, number 8, and like the motherfucker 6'10", and he has no competition. Like he gets to play until Jonathan Isaac comes back, if he comes back.
He's good, man. He's real good.
Yeah.
All right, and so you asked me for a 20%, and this is a 20% guy that I think is kind of a right momentum guy. I don't think he's a guy that necessarily is going to be, you know, a guy who's going to produce all year. But while he's playing, I'll take my chances on him. 20%. This is Josh Hart. So you know, while he plays, he's been productive. He's like he's kind of like a high rebound shooting guard. So it kind of brings a unique skill set to the position. But over the last week, he's averaging 14 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, I think almost 2 stocks, and he's shooting about 1.5 threes a game. So again, you know, he's going to have some clunkers, but the good thing about Hart is if he gets, you know, consistent minutes, even if his shot's not falling, he'll still get you a ton of rebounds, and it looks like he's going to get you a couple dimes too. So, you know, that's a guy I like as long as he's playing. You got to monitor it closely. And, you know, if he starts losing minutes, then he's not, you know, take him out. But if he, you know, if it looks like he's going to play 25 minutes a game, then he's a guy who can, you know, at 20%, if you're looking for someone under 20%, he's a guy I like.
Dude, who's on that team? You know, it's like, honestly, what a disservice. Yeah. Whatever. I can't wait to watch them beat the Jazz. Okay. For my under 20%, I actually have 2 under 10 because that will be less than 20. And I feel like that's okay. Technically.
Hey, do it.
Yeah. We fly by the seats of our pants here. JaVale McGee has been a top 75 player over the past 2 weeks. Some of that was with DeAndre Ayton sitting, but number 63 on the player rater is number 63 on the player rater. He is 8.5% rostered. The Phoenix Suns have 4 games this week at the Spurs, at the Cavs, at the Knicks, and at the Nets. Those are 4 games that JaVale could see a lot of PT in. Especially if the Suns don't want to play Ayton in back-to-backs. JaVale's averaging 10-7 on the year with 1+ block per game on the 1+ block per game. A lot of hard consonants there on the season. And that's starting and coming off the bench. He's just a nice source of rebounds that come cheap, you know? Like that's... We talk a lot about how scarce dimes are and assists, like dependable point guards, like I'm going to say in a second, like getting at least 4 assists per game is super nice from a player. You know, getting boards is nice too. Like if you can get 7 rebounds per game, that's going to be valuable in streaming at least. And JaVale's getting minutes, especially while Frank the Tank is injured. The other guy is also a top 100 player over the past 2 weeks. He is 9% rostered. He also gets 4 games. This is Patrick Beverley of the Minnesota Cats, who has pulled the team together. Now they're an elite threat, maybe. Anyway, look at this schedule. They get to play at the Pelicans, then at home for the Heat, at Charlotte, and then at Philadelphia. Those are four games where Patrick Beverley is going to be getting up into people's faces. I think he'll have a really big role in all four of them, especially the Heat game. Like, he's just going to get all up in Kyle Lowry's shit and Jimmy's shit all goddamn game. And he'll be the only guy who does it, you know? Yeah. Well, Ant will too, I guess. But, like, Pat Bev will be aggressive about it. But over the past week, he's averaging 10, 5, and 5 with a steal and a block per game. That's nice no matter what position you're in. But, like, from a point guard, that's great. He's another cheap source of boards, especially for a guard, and he gets you dimes. And he is due for some positive regression with his threes. He's shot better previous seasons. So, okay, you know, it's super unsexy, and you actually like him more for the attitude, but he has sort of seemed to mesh a little bit with these Timberwolves.
Yeah, he has.
Still sucks. But, you know, like, he's delivering in counting stats. Like, anyone who gives you 5 and 5, 5 rebounds and 5 assists, I mean, like, you have to pay attention to them.
It seems like his playmaking has taken kind of that next step. And, you know, he's I think because of that, that's going to keep him on the floor. Because, you know, now he's not a guy that is like a black hole offensively. Even if, you know, if he's not going to be a knockdown shooter, but if he can hit the shot at a respectable clip and kind of make plays every now and then that's a guy you can keep on the floor, right? Because his defense is obviously, you know, tremendous. So I like it. And it's funny, in our league, I've tried to pick him up a couple times and, like, people keep beating me to it.
So yeah.
No one's like holding on to him, but everyone, right, quite a few people are streaming him.
I like the counting stats in both boards and dimes is really nice, but in real life, I just sort of feel like maybe he's the perfect dude to have with Kat and Anthony Edwards. Like, just a hard edge, like, listen, fuck the rest of this league, fuck what everyone is saying. Like, let's just play out there. Because, like, Pat Bev doesn't owe anyone anything. He's been traded. Yeah. He gets disrespected. He still doesn't give a shit. Like, he'll get up in LeBron's chest. He's great. I love him. I wish he was a Piston so hard.
He does seem like a Piston.
Doesn't he? Or, like, if he were a Knick, he would be beloved. You know, like, they already would have retired his jersey. I have a dynasty pick. Do you have a dynasty pick?
I don't have a dynasty pick, but I do have a 2% owned guy. Ooh, that I think nice. Might be a decent stream in a really, really deep league.
Give it to us.
So, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but Danilo Gallinari.
Okay.
Last four games, he's playing 26 minutes a game, putting up 11 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1.5 stocks. You know, he can shoot the three. DeAndre Hunter is hurt right now. So it looks like there's a little bit of an opportunity for Danilo to get some added minutes as the backup there at the power forward spot. So not a guy who he's not a dynasty pick. Like, I don't think he's getting better with time. You know, in the interim, like, if he's going to get some minutes, if he's going to play 25 minutes a game, you know, he's going to give you a few counting stats, and he's a really good shooter. So that's a guy I trust to be able to hit that shot at a consistent clip, you know, even if he's not playing, you know, starter minutes. 2% owned, someone worth a flyer if you really need to dig deep this week.
He was basically the best player on the Denver Nuggets for like 3 seasons. You know, like, that's a dude who has such a reduced role and has been injured that I think we forgot about him a little bit. But, you know, when the Hawks signed him, it wasn't a coup, but it was sort of like, oh, shit. Well, that's a really good player going to this team. What's his role going to be? And it's been low. Because, I mean, it's been limited because of all the rookie and younger dudes on the team. But now with Hunter out, you know, it's like we're still going to pull Cam Reddish off the bench and Danilo get out there, you know, and help us.
Yeah, and he's
like he's been successful before for sure.
And he's a big man, right? I mean, as much as the league has gone to, he's 6'10", right? And so the league has gone to playing, you know, wings at in the front court. But like in certain matchups, you need a guy who's a legitimate, who's got the size of a true power forward. So, you know, I think that
he can distribute. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, he's a smart player, and he's a guy who, like you said, health is usually is always a big concern with him. But in the short term, you know, he's a career 38% 3-point shooter. He shot over 40% each of the last three seasons. So, you know, there's value in that.
You know, honestly, I thought when they signed him that he was going to be the second best player next to Trey. And I was like, that's kind of going to be a cool duo. But yeah, it's just injuries have diminished him. But if he's healthy and he gets these minutes, then absolutely.
Well, I did not think he was going to be the second best player next to Trey, but that's good to know, Natty.
I mean, they didn't have Clint Capella at that point. John Collins wasn't John Collins. Because in Denver, he had like a top 10 plus minus for 3 years in a row or something like that. Like he was really good.
He had two seasons in Denver where he was like 19 points, 5 rebounds, a couple assists, and he was shooting, you know, high 30s from three. So, you know, that was really valuable.
I mean, not that the Nuggets went anywhere. My dynasty pick is from this challenge game. Or no, we watched the Cavs. It was from Houston. Sorry. We both watched the Houston game. Alperen Sengun. He just looks so cool, man. He's 19 years old. Sengun, excuse me. He's 19 years old. He's 6'10". He played against pros in Europe, but he's not getting the minutes just yet in Houston. But I looked this shit up. Okay, out of everyone in the NBA right now who posts up at least 2 times per game, okay, Sengun is tied for the 4th best field goal percentage in post-ups. He's tied with LeBron. Like, he and LeBron, when they post up, score at the exact same rate. like the fact that Sengun is, like, he just has old man, you know, feet, you know? Like, he has these old man interior paint moves, and it's a really kind of nostalgic retro way to play. And I've just really enjoyed watching him all the time that I've seen him, you know, in the first 20 games. He's not getting the minutes or the shots yet, but obviously Houston did not draft him to do nothing. So they're going to try to develop him over the next couple of years. I've already tried to buy him cheaply in our main league, and Willie rebuffed me immediately.
Not surprised.
But, like, when you have old man moves in the paint and you can actually score against dudes that are bigger than you, that suggests to me that you know what you're doing. So I think that Sengun can grow into at least a dude who gets you low double doubles if he gets the minutes on a consistent basis. And I'm pretty excited about him. Like, if they get rid of, if they trade Christian Wood or, you know, like do some other shit, like I could see him ending the year at a much better player rating than he has right now. He's not a must add, but if you have a roster spot to burn, I think you should pick him up, and I think you should actually watch him play because it is like kind of 1980s fun.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Sengun, I think, in our first or second episode of the season, and and I think at the time I mentioned this guy was like the MVP of the Turkish league last year.
That's right.
So, I mean, he's not a guy who's just like 100% projection, right? I mean, in theory, he's going to kind of come in and hit the ground running a little bit. I mean, he's definitely had some moments on defense where he's looked out of place and he's struggling, but he's 19 years old and, you know, he's playing the five and it's going to take some time, but yeah, I like him too. If I had to guess, I don't think the Rockets trade Christian Wood, but if they do trade Christian Wood, that would just immediately open the floodgates for this guy. So, you know, I totally agree with you there as far as potential upside for him down the road. If and when, you know, Houston makes some trades, but, you know, if in a dynasty league, this guy, I'd say he's a must own in a dynasty league right now.
Like, I think it's just so much fun to watch dudes in the NBA who are idiosyncratic. Like, they're just not, they don't look cookie cutter. They're not like everybody else, whether because they just are specialists or because they don't really look the part. But this is a fucking 19-year-old who's like dynamite in the goddamn paint, you know? And it's like really weird to see. And it's super cool. Like, I really want to watch Rocket. I want to watch him versus Gobert. I want versus AD. Like, I just want to see this fucking little kid go up against the best centers in the league. Because he impressed me. I didn't think someone would be able to do that at such a young age. Okay, those are our ads. Do you have any final thoughts for the week? Any Thanksgiving Day, you know, prognostications?
Not really fantasy related, but just a couple things that stood out to me when I was looking through kind of team statistics. So I mentioned one that Indy was number one in blocks. But one thing that stood out to me was Denver is actually number one in scoring defense. So
really,
for what it's worth, teams are not putting up a ton of points against the Nuggets right now. Maybe that's a function of who they've played and, you know, some injuries. But that surprised me. I don't immediately think of Denver as a defensive stronghold.
I wonder if that's, I mean, Nikola Jokic, his PER, I mean, people have probably read about this, but like he's operating at a level that hasn't really been seen since Wilt Chamberlain in terms of like, you know, percentage of win shares per game for a player.
Well, because he's always been an amazing distributor and rebounder, but like
his an offensive player, now, but he's not known for like being an all around.
He's been amazing though.
Yeah,
he's putting up the last 2 years, you know, 26 points a game to go with, and then now he's giving you 13 rebounds.
He's the MVP. He's super young. He's without the two other good players on the team, well, the second best players on the team in Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray, and he's playing better. I mean, he's
59% from the field.
You know, if you're Jokic, you probably came into this season being like, I won the MVP, but everyone said it's only because I played more games than Joel Embiid. Well, let's fucking prove him wrong. Like, why can't I win again? You know?
Yeah. And then
if he keeps playing like this, he'll have to win again, by the way. Otherwise, like, none of that will matter. Like, the win-loss record will go out the window. It'll be like when Westbrook averaged the triple-double. People will be like, okay, cool, you broke a record. You get the MVP.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think Steph Curry's putting up a pretty strong case for it, too. And his numbers are down too. His shooting is down, but it just his impact looks right better, now. Though.
He also looks a little swole. Like, I kind of feel like Steph was like, "Hey, motherfuckers! Like, I'm a multiple MVP. Like, I'm arguably the most important player in basketball since Dr. J. I redesigned how the NBA operates. Yeah. Like the Warriors." Run so many fewer pick and rolls than any other team because people double Steph no matter what he's doing or where he is. So like you don't need to run pick and rolls with Steph, even though that's usually what most teams are trying to do with elite players. Like he just runs all over the goddamn floor. It's crazy.
Well, and he shoots from so deep now. So it's like he's shooting well before he would even get to the pick half the time.
Dude, and he's like a dude that doesn't dunk either. You know, like he has such a sweet finger roll. It's all the, you know, every time he penetrates is a really nice layup. It's just funny that he's such a dominant player without dunks. And like Dr. J was a dominant player, you know, just with dunks. Both those guys, like they're not the best players that ever lived. You wouldn't choose them number one in a draft, but they arguably changed the NBA more than any other players ever have.
Yeah, agreed. And then the only other thing that stood out to me, one thing that stood out to me was on Friday night, the Bulls didn't miss a free throw. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. DeMar DeRozan has put his
fingerprint on that team.
It's unreal. And Zach, like a bunch of dudes who thought they were ones, I think, would react poorly to DeMar coming in and being like, okay, well, maybe I score more than you. But Zach is like, no, maybe we just both score better, like together.
Yeah.
Like it seems like they're very simpatico. And Lonzo, man, like he was right. Get the fuck out of New Orleans. Like get your ass to Mars. Get your ass to Chicago. Him and Caruso look brilliant together on defense. You know, like that team, if that team had Miles Turner, I would start thinking conference finals. But
that's
like,
an interesting fit. I like that.
Like Vooch isn't playing right now, and I think Tony Bradley is their backup center, and it's like they're super thin in the front court, and they don't have Tad anymore because they traded him to the Spurs in the DeRozan deal. So I think that they're
probably... That's what we said, right? That was the knock on Chicago, was the depth.
Yeah.
They're like the opposite of the Knicks.
But they lost their starting center, and they're still like totally dominating people. They look great. I mean, I knew that they would have a competent defense because that's what Billy Donovan does, but the fact that they've looked this good, the fact that Caruso and Zoe are so complementary is surprising.
Well, and also I think it kind of them losing, like you said, losing Vooch, it just kind of lets them lean even more into like what their strengths are, which is just like, just they're just flying around, like, you know, it's just craziness on the perimeter. They're cutting, they're jumping passing lanes, like they're helping in the paint. They're you know, pinning guys, you know, along the baseline and doing, having other guy help defenders come over and rip the ball or block the shot. It's been pretty fun to watch. If you like seeing transition offense because of great defense, like you should definitely watch the Bulls.
And like I look at the box score and I'm like, oh yeah, DeMar 10 plus free throws. Well, that makes sense. Like that's just how they play. You're like,
he's scoring like 9 for 10 every night now.
Yeah, it is. He seems to be on a mission, and like it is impressive that he's still playing at this level. He's always been a good player. It's just like the threes. And he seemed disposable, also the defense. But you know what? Like, Zach wasn't good at defense, really. He got solid last year, or better at least. And, you know, it's Donovan's done a great job. I kind of feel like right now he should get coach of the year just because this is so impressive with the defense. Like, the scoring, whatever. But, like, they definitely look like a top 7 team.
They look legit.
Which sucks. That sucks. But it's like, if you look this good, Zach LaVine has to resign, right?
It's a good situation for him. It seems to be working. So, you know, we'll see. Long season. And like you said, they, you know, one key injury and that's going to be a problem for them. Their depth is lacking, but they're a lot of fun to watch.
All right, everybody, have a great Thanksgiving. Be safe. We are planning to do a podcast next Sunday. We'll see how everything goes with fams and the holiday. Yeah, enjoy the week, and we will talk to you next time. Have a good one. Bye.
Have a good turkey day.